You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 661. We're here with Brenna Red. And we're going to play some songs by The Last Gang. The first song that we're going to play is one that has already been released. It's called Madness. This is Madness, and we'll be right back.
At best, I'm infinite and reckless. Your worst is singing in my ear. We share illogically our headspace. Two peas inside the atmosphere.
And that was Madness off the brand new record by The Last Gang. It's not out yet. It is out. Well, the new record, of course, is called Obscene Daydreams. It's out September 20. But The Last Gang, and I'm glad we're doing this interview, Last Gang is on tour right now. And I'm going to let Brenna talk in a second. But here's the dates. Starting today, August 15, Reno, then Boise, then Seattle, then Portland, then Eugene, then Albany, then Sacramento, then Long Beach, then Las Vegas, San Diego, Santa Cruz, Chicago, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Garwood, Wilmington, Delaware at Bar 13, and I will be there, a very cool venue, Virginia Beach, Wilmington, North Carolina, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Nashville, and it wraps up September 7 in Chattanooga. Brenna, tonight is the debut of the tour. Are you excited? Are you nervous? How are you feeling?
I always get a little apprehensive before shows, especially like the first part of tour, but that goes away real quick once we all hit the stage. But I'm excited. We just literally got out of the van moments ago from like a 10-hour drive from home, landed in Reno. I gotta say hi to my guys from the Drown, and we're gonna fucking do this thing tonight.
I guess when you go off on a new tour, I mean, you've done a lot of tours, you've done a lot of shows. When you go off on a tour, is it like a big event, or is it like, well, time to clock in on Tuesday? Like, how big of a deal is touring in your life?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, sometimes, like, it can feel like work, of course, you know, because those long drives are not as fun as they used to be when we were younger. But, I mean, it's kind of like this weird juxtaposition between, like, super boring, calm, long drives where you're just reading on your phone, playing video games, and then like everything's at 10, everything's loud, chaotic. It's just like super high energy. So it's weird. It's a boring job. And then also, it's the most hectic, exciting, exhausting, thrilling, fulfilling job at the same time.
I'm not a huge video game guy, but every once in a while I play a few different games. You say you play video games on your phone. What's your video game of choice right now?
Oh, I'm a Nintendo kid through and through. Right now I'm playing like Luigi's Mansion, but it's always Zelda, no matter what form. Tears of the Kingdom, I think, is what I'm going to do this tour. It's a good
See,
time killer.
I don't know how many times I played Golden Axe, but I still love playing Golden Axe. Does that ring a bell to you, or is Golden Axe before your time?
I know Golden Axe must have been before my time. What was that, a Nintendo?
Well, Golden Axe was in the arcades, and then it, I mean, this like I mean, I think it came out in like 83 or 84. It was in the
Like
arcades,
an
and
Atari.
then it was on Genesis and Super Nintendo and all those kinds of things. So,
Oh yeah.
anyways, we're not here to talk about video games. We're here to talk about The Last Gang.
Yeah.
One of the cool things about the new Last Gang record is in the press materials, Brennan said, "We don't like have a theme for this record. It's just a bunch of cool punk rock songs." And I'm paraphrasing a little bit. And I thought that was quite refreshing because a lot of punk bands, they're like, this whole album is influenced by our trip out west when something happened. Or this album is about how, my dad left us when we were four, which I actually like concept and theme records, but I did like how you were like, these are just a bunch of punk rock songs that are about what's going on right now in our lives. Very much like a Clash record or an Adverts record, where it's like, here's what's happening right now. I guess, was there a tactical decision just to rapid fire do some punk songs, or was that a strategic decision?
No, I mean, that's kind of how we've always been since day one with our writing process. We write about right now, we write about what's happening, what's affecting us. And sometimes that is the past, and sometimes it's the thought of the future. I think somebody nailed it recently in an interview or an article. They said it's like a journal. And I'm like, that's fucking smart, man. I should have thought of that, but it's a really smart idea. Like, Last Gang albums are just journals, and one year it changes to the next, you know? And it's just it's a document it's documents of our lives and what we've been going through. So, this last year it's kind of more of the same shit what we've been doing with be polarized between a bunch of people and hate and then also just love and nostalgia because it's always there. So yeah, it's a journal of what we are. I mean, I can't say I'll never write a themed album. But I just, it's not our jam.
You mentioned that it's like a journal. How open of a book are you? That is like, while listening to this record, will fans be like, "Oh my God, I can't believe Brenda did this when she was 17?" Or is it kind of more the poetic thing where you can kind of shape it as you like as the listener?
No, I've always really enjoyed wearing my life on my sleeve. Like, I'm pretty transparent with a lot of stuff. I just never felt the need to be secretive. I've had a lot of people that I used to associate with in my formative years that were very secretive and just they wanted to control the narrative. I'm like, ah, but the narrative is us. It's our stories. Like if I don't want to control that, I just want to tell it.
Has that ever come to bite you? Like, has anyone's like, "How dare you say this about me in your song," or whatever? Have you ever had that happen?
No, I fucking wish though. That would be awesome. I guess we're not there yet. We're not there yet to get some haters, but I love to wear. I love my life's on my sleeve. I want all transparency. If people want to talk shit and hate, that means you're engaging and you're listening. So I love that.
Along the lines of, I guess we'll call them Brenna Journal tracks, is Electric Avenue, and I want to draw a slight diversion here. I love how The Last Gang, and I don't know if it's by design or by coincidence, references other songs and albums in their album titles. The last album was called Noise, 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 which I thought was about the damn song, was actually about a record store named after the damn song, correct?
Yep, correct.
And so the new album opens up with a really cool song called Electric Avenue. I'm a huge Eddie Grant fan, a huge Equals fan. Is there an
Same.
Eddie Grant connection here to Electric Avenue?
Absolutely not. You know what? Funny enough, I guess I would categorize Electric Avenue as Noise, Noise, Noise Part 2. because the song is also about my best friend and growing up and the stuff we would get into, just like how Noise was about her as well. And this is just a continuation of my love for her. And we used to take a bus that would pick us up on Electric Avenue, and which is in Noise. Take the 42 north past Electric to ride. So it's the same street, Electric Avenue.
Well, I'm gonna throw a little bit of Clash trivia at Brenna, and we'll see how she
Oh,
does.
oh, oh, shit. Okay.
Brenna, can you connect Electric Avenue to the Clash?
Oh, like the song Electric Avenue.
Well, so here's the answer.
Electric
Electric Avenue,
Avenue.
of course, was written by Eddie Grant. Eddie
Right, of
Grant was
course.
in it, Eddie Grant was in the Equals, and the Clash famously covered a song by the Equals that a lot of people think is an original, but it's actually a cover. Of course, that's Police on My Back by the Equals, which is Eddie Grant.
I didn't know that was. Oh, I do know Police and Thieves was a cover, but I didn't know it was by the Equals. Holy shit.
Well, Police and Thieves is a Junior Mervin cover produced by Lee
Oh, not
Scratch
Police and Thieves.
Perry. Police on My Back is the Equals,
Police on My
which is
Back.
Eddie Grant. So there you go.
And I'm running. Wow, holy shit. I learn something every day. I love it.
But I guess taking it back to the reggae or reggae inspiration, the song Electric Avenue has a reggae breakdown, which Last Gang has done before. I love when Last Gang does reggae breakdowns or reggae or police style reggae breakdowns, if that's how you want to reference it. What's your connection to reggae and ska, or is there none? You just kind of dig those chords.
We kind of have dubbed it evil reggae because it's darker. It's not like this, white boy reggae. It's not like Sublime or Happy. It's usually colored in like a darker feel. So we call it evil reggae, which has been deemed our coined. But I don't know. I mean, it pretty much does stem from the Clash and like being one of the first bands I heard growing up. And I remember the CD on my brother's tables that I would listen to before I bought my own, and it was Rancid and Operation Ivy and this, the concept of upticks and the rock steady. And I learned more about like the deeper, like the difference between like rock steady and reggae and ska. And it was always so enthralling to me. And I guess it's been at my core since day one, and then you go through your teenage years and I just wanted to be aggressive and aggro and punk. But then as I get older, I learned how to temper my songwriting, and it's always kind of come back to that ska rock steady core.
I guess related, what's your opinion of the band The Police?
I love the Police. I think they were pulled out of time. I think they got super mainstream, and that's what maybe has colored them within the punk subculture community of not being justified for what they have. But man, I can listen to those albums on repeat, and some of them are weird, some of them don't make sense, but tell me fucking Sandinista made sense. That album sucked. A lot of the songs are terrible. Like, you Police were musicians and they were experimenting and failing and trying and hitting a lot of gold with that. I know, I think Police are, if anybody talks, you can talk shit to who you want, but if you talk shit on the Police, man, you don't know nothing.
Well, I agree with you, except I'm going to make a waffle. I love The Police, especially for the first three Police records. And I'm still working on liking the last two Police records, and I'm sure I'll come around eventually, but I love the first three. But and you can feel free to disagree with me if you like. I recently was trying to listen to Sting's first and second records, his solo records, and I'm like, how did the guy that wrote almost all the songs in The Police make the most boring records I've ever heard in my entire life? Like, why is
Because
the drop off so
it's the
bad?
magic sauce. It's the magic sauce, man. Like, I and I again, I might get some hate for this, but I love Against Me. I love the cohesion of the songs. But the last album that Laura did, I didn't it didn't move me. I don't hate it, but it didn't catch me. It didn't make me go, wow. And I think it's the magic of writing with other people that challenge you and don't want to do, they're not yes men, just saying, yes, let's write the song. And that's what, Sean and Ken and Sam bring to me. They don't just like, let me do whatever I want to do. It's a collaboration. And the same thing where I think, my opinion, I think producers are very important for albums because it's a, even more of an outside opinion that like helps push that bar to a songwriting level that you wouldn't have expected just doing it with your own inside of your own head.
Well, you actually had Cameron Webb on this record, who you worked before. Cameron Webb is kind of, I don't know if famous is the right word, but maybe it is, or renowned or known for, like, he's worked with Pennywise, Alkaline Trio, NOFX. He's very well known for merging the pop with the punk, and not pop punk, but I would say very listenable punk, as opposed to crass punk, if you will, which I love too, which is can be very challenging, you know? So what did Cameron Webb, what was it like bouncing off Cameron Webb and working with Cameron Webb on this record? How was that a unique experience?
I get such a kick, man, working with him. Whenever my friends get to work with him, I get so excited because I'm like, oh, you're in for a treat. Like, he makes me feel like cocaine. It's just ideas are flowing, but they're not shitty ideas. You don't wake up in the morning going, that was a mistake. But like, it's just always, it's so electrifying. And my brain worked with him 100%. And look, he's not for everybody. And I know maybe, there are some people out there that might have not enjoyed with him or didn't like the product. But for me, he speaks my language and our language so well. And he's just a fucking nutball. I love it. Like, how does this guy have so much energy? And, he's older than us. He's got a family. He doesn't do crazy stuff. But when you talk to him, he acts like that 13, 14-year-old kid that's like, this moment is so important. And you're like, fuck, it is. Let's make it important.
Well said. One of the things I like about this record is that it's arguably the most political Last Gang record. There's a track called NRA Back to School, which is pretty clear about its intent. And that's kind of doubly interesting because Last Gang is an OC band, and OC is very split politically. So I guess a kind of a multiple part question is, what's it like these days being a punk band in the OC? And why NRA Back to School? Why is this exact topic an issue you wanted to focus on for this record?
It was just another mass shooting that blended into the background because it's so common. And the phrase of like, when is enough? Like, when will enough be enough? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. I don't know when it is. And the bullshit thing is that it's not a political topic. Guns aren't fucking political. It's a public safety thing. Like, I don't understand because it comes back to money and capitalism, and it's a business. And NRA wants to make money. How do you do that? You need to protect your business, so you have to lobby to these. It's fucking insane. It shouldn't be political. It's like a fucking seatbelt in a car. Like, that's a law to wear it for your own protection. Like, I don't understand why you don't have background checks, why you don't have like the simple, most common things. And it just, I don't know, it just got to a point where it got super frustrating. And I just I was like, all right, time to write a song about this because I feel like I'm dead inside to it because it's so numb and it shouldn't be numb. It shouldn't be fucking numb. And it's I guess the line that really triggered the song, what I wanted to write it about was I just, it's a cult. Like a lot of these extremists in any category you talk about, it's just a cult. Like it's so obvious to everybody else in the world, but why is it still around?
You sort of alluded to this, but how are you feeling right now in the grand scheme of things, both you personally and I guess and the state of the USA? So personally, where are you at right now? Are you feeling good? Are you feeling bad? Where are you right now personally?
I guess I've always never felt like super in love with like the country that is America because it doesn't make sense to me. Like it's just a piece of land. What I love is my community, my tribe, my friends, the people around me, my neighborhood, my neighbors who are cool, like support. That's what's important to me. And I've always thought like this idea of a country as a whole is so asinine. Like there's everybody hates each other. Me and my husband don't have kids. We've tried, but as the years go on, I'm like, I don't think I want it. Like, this is just, I don't want to bring somebody into this world that's so messed up. And we always joke about like when we move or when we retire, like we want to move to Berlin or something. But I mean, they got their problems too. So it's what's important is the local community surrounded by you, your friends, the people that support you, and that's what's important for me.
Give me your reflection of this statement. Penny Rimbaud, kind of Crass, has this like famous statement: "I can't change the world, but I can change my immediate surroundings." Which to me was always a very powerful statement because, like, when you look out, you look at Trump saying the things that he says, or you look at these massive companies that are charging, $200 for insulin or whatever, whatever. You're like, well, what can I do about any of this? I can't do anything about any of this. But then when you think, but I can change my immediate surroundings. I can not buy certain things for me personally. Or buy or support certain things for me personally. I can help out this one person. So I'm curious as to your statement. As that is that statement, I can't change the world, but I can change my immediate surroundings. Is that a good philosophy, or is that thinking too small? Because if you would ask, I mean, not to put words in Joe Strummer's mouth, but Joe Strummer's kind of whole thing was we can change the world. You know what I mean? So where do you stand on that spectrum, I guess?
Afar on the side of I can't change the world, but I can change what I'm connected to. That's what fits me best. But the thing is, we do have people in this world who are great changers that could move this giant ship, this Titanic, that it takes so much power to steer left or right. There are people that can do that change. I don't think that's me. I think my role in this world is to create art, to make connections to the people that are closely around, close to me and that are around me. Maybe it would be one day I could, but I don't know. I don't think that's my place. I think my place is to change those that are directly around me. And then maybe that's a ripple effect. Maybe that'll go to that person who does make great change in the world, and they were inspired by something that I said. It's all intertwined.
I guess two last questions, and then we'll play a track. We'll come back and we'll do some news. And actually, we're going to talk about someone that maybe changed his immediate surroundings on the second half of the episode. The title, "Obscene Daydream." I like that. Obscene Daydreams. That is out 20 September 2024 on Fat Records. Do you like explaining titles, or do you not? If you do, tell me what that means to you. But if you don't like explaining titles, you can say it means whatever you want it to mean for yourself.
Oh no, I've always been obsessed with words and lyrics. They're very, everything means something to me when I write it down and when I track it. Where I say the word "the" is important. Like, and from that song, it was about my best friend, and we were just little baby punk rockers who had these fantasies of like, we're gonna make it. We're gonna do our art. I'm gonna be in a band. She's gonna be an artist, and we would like have this all this hope of like something's gonna happen for us, and just it, but it was always in a really kind of fucked up way. This just an obscene daydream that we had, and lo and behold, we both grew up, and I'm doing an interview in Reno as I just landed for the first day of tour with my band, who's on Fat, and she's a huge toy artist that has huge followings. But there's like Designer Con, and has like it's just bizarre how we manifested our own futures together.
And actually, I'd lie. I'm going to throw in a couple other questions.
Yeah,
Just you're playing Santa Cruz. I used to live in San Jose. I love Santa Cruz. What's some fun stuff you're going to do in Santa Cruz? Streetlight Records, perhaps?
here's the bummer thing, the truth about tour, at least where we are right now, because we can't afford to have days off or time off. It's we're pro I'm we're probably not going to do anything cool. It's we're going to show up to the venue, we're going to do load in, we're going to do sound check, we're going to go backstage, get our stuff situated, and then maybe have dinner at the venue, and then we're going to doors open, get dressed, play the show, go to the merch table, talk to people, say hi, do some photos, pack up, settle, drive to the hotel, do it again. Like I there's a my guy showed me this interview that Celine Dion, I think Celine, yeah, that's just Celine Dion posted about how she's touring the world and she's get to see all this like crazy stuff, and she kind of choked up. She's like, I've been all over the world, but I haven't seen anything. And that's kind of how it is when you're a working class type of band. So, but with all that negativity and blah 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 blah, I would love some suggestions if we do get like maybe half an hour of where we can just grab some food to go real quick.
Well, I'm glad you asked because you led directly into my second to last question. You are playing Wilmington, Delaware at Bar 13, and I will be there. It'll be a cool show. Literally, literally across the street is a place called Mr. Pasta. It was run by like an 85, 90-year-old guy named Nick until he sadly passed away about a year and a half ago. Literally, literally the best raviolis you will eat anywhere in the world. However, they tend to be closed because Nick has now passed away. So I don't know if it'll be open or closed. But if you have time, literally across the street from Bar 13 in Delaware, it looks like a shack that's falling apart. Mr. Pasta, literally the best raviolis you will ever eat. And so
you had me at pasta.
Well, there you go. There you go. I mean, it really is. I hope it's open when you're down there. It is literally amazing. And so anyway, last question. You mentioned Berlin. There's a track on the album called Berlin to Rome. And it actually opens a little bit of a techno beat, if you will, perhaps an homage to Berlin's famous dance clubs.
That would be touring. A good idea, yeah. Why about touring.
So why is Berlin special, and why is Rome special to you? And does the song mean more than just boy, isn't touring fun?
It's a sense of peace that you get, you know, as a musician who gets to enjoy this. Because it's not for everybody. It's hard work, but like most of us do, there's always levels of depression that we deal with. And what really helps with me is moving forward and doing things. And being on the road, even though it's hard, is this sense of serenity that I get, that I can be alone with my own thoughts and it doesn't bother me. It's really wonderful. So I love touring. And then when we went to Europe for the first time, three tours ago, Muti brought us over. And our first city that we landed in was in Berlin, and he picked us up in his van, and we got to the Kreuzberg, District 39, I think, or 36, and he took us to the Rock and Roll Herberg, and that's where we stayed, and it was just, it felt like I've been there. I know it sounds cheesy, but I felt like I've been there before. Like, I didn't feel like a stranger in a strange place. I felt confidence to walk the streets and like I would know every corner. I don't know, it's a weird feeling that I had, that it just felt so familiar from the get-go. And every other time I've been back, it's been just more of the same. Andy from Cortex Records is the most hospitable person I've ever met, and my husband flew out to our last UK tour just to hang out because he's never been. I've been talking about Berlin forever, so he got to experience Berlin, and he said the same thing. He's like, when the moment he was there, he's like, I felt like I was home. And Andy took him around the whole city in his like 68 Mustang, and everybody's just so awesome. And then we went to the Franken bar, hang out, drank with people till 2-3 in the morning, partying. I still get random texts from people. Like, this one guy was like, hey, do you remember me from Franken? I was the producer director guy from Lilyhammer. We're doing a festival in Norway. Maybe you can play it. I was like, it's just this weird community in Berlin where everybody is like a family. It's cheesy and I love it.
Well, let's listen to Berlin to Rome right now off the brand new Last Gang record called Obscene Daydreams, out September 20 via Fat Records. They're on tour literally starting today through September 7, and they're going from Southwest to West Coast to East Coast and then down South. So if you're anywhere in the USA, you can see them, and that's going to be rad. So this is Berlin to Rome, and we will be right back.
Just
are back, and let's hit some news stories. Brenna mentioned Sublime, and she says, we don't play happy reggae like Sublime plays. I love at least classic era Sublime. I'm a massive Sublime fan. Brenna, do you enjoy Sublime? And what's your opinion on Jacob now singing Sublime? I'm actually surprised, and it seems like pretty much everybody is pro, which maybe that speaks to Sublime's fan base, and that you're right, it's happy, so hooray, let's just celebrate what Sublime is. I'm still not sure how I feel about Jacob singing Sublime. You know what I mean? He sounds good. I'll definitely give him that. But do I want to see Sublime, but without the main Sublime guy, but with his kid? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is bizarre. It does have a sense of familiarity because it's, you know, it's the lineage. It's the throne has been passed to the heir. I don't know if I have a problem with it. I could go either way. I guess the true test is time. You know, I want to see what he sounds like, looks like, stage persona, interviews, support for other bands. Like, I want to see what tour does to him, like the salt that he gets. It will either make me love it or not love it. Because I mean, look, the band's tight. He sings great. But I always hold I'm always a little on reserve for new musicians on the road that haven't toured. And I don't know about him. Maybe he has toured. I don't know. But new touring with this band, it's gotta take some time.
I'm thinking, I'm still on the fence, but it's not like Greg Ginn's Black Flag where Keith Morse is still alive. You know, Bradley Nowell's dead, so what do you want him to do? You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I guess I could come around. I'm surprised. I would think that I'd be all in because Bradley, I love Sublime. Bradley Nowell's dead, so who else is going to do it? His son is pretty much the best person to do it. But, you know, I guess not everything needs to be brought back either. I don't know. But maybe I'm being a sourpuss. I don't know.
You know, another thing that's going to really prove whether it's going to stick or not, or whether it's just a gimmick, new album. What does the new music sound like? Give me something to bite my teeth into. Then I'll really judge it.
Well, we will see. But speaking of judging, but perhaps judging in a good way, we alluded to this guy earlier. Kepi Ghouli he's been re-releasing the Groovy Ghoulies records for a while now. They're re-releasing Freaks on Parade, which was really sort of an EP, and the new version is an LP with 6 bonus tracks. He's got a new cover. It's remastered. Although the thing with all the – I mean, listen, I think Kepi's one of the greatest. I love Groovy Ghoulies. I love Kepi Ghouli. I actually think I might like Kepi – Electric solo the band better than Groovy, although I like them both. But like I said, the thing with the Groovy Ghouli reissues is they're remastered, but they sounded pretty great to begin with. So it's like, oh, it sounds slightly different. But that being said, it's cool that you can get these records on vinyl again because, I mean, they're like $70, $80, $100, $150 records on vinyl because they came out on Lookout way back in the day.
Yeah.
And no one can get them. And now you can get them for like literally like $20, which is pretty cool. So I guess to kick off the conversation, I love Kepi. Freaks on Parade is definitely one of their better albums. Brenda, you have a Kepi perspective. Are you a fan, not a fan, new to Kepi, Groovy Ghoulies? How do you feel about Groovy Ghoulies?
I never got them into my catalog. I had a compilation. Again, a lot of my music was influenced by my brother growing up, and he was a big Rancid, NOFX, Operation Ivy, and a lot of Lookout bands. And I remember a compilation, and it had like Antichrist on it and Groovy Ghoulies and this other one. They did what's that song? Cuidado San Juan, Cuidado Chupacabra. I forgot the song, but it had the word.
Yeah, it's Groovy Ghoulies. The song's called Chupacabra. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I remember. And that holds a very special place to me with my in my memories, but I just never progressed with like getting the album or listening to it. And I know why now. I'm thinking out loud. One of my main sources of ideas to like listen to other bands was when I would go to my local show, like Public Storage or Showcase, I would look at the patches on other people's clothes, and knowing the people that who I like, I know I like your style of music that you listen to, you know, like my best friend and stuff like that. I would look at the patches and go, okay, I want to get this album next. So I guess nobody had the advertisement billboard that is a patch of the Groovy Ghoulies, because my route went down like, oh, I saw a patch of the Toy Dolls. I'm like, this is wonderful. I saw a patch of the Attics. I was like, this is awesome. And then it just kind of went down, and I saw a patch for a Crass, and I was like, nah, not my cup of tea, but I get it. Not my thing.
I'm going to break the fourth wall, but if you are in a band, I'm speaking to the listeners, if you're in a band or any sort of thing in the public and you want to do good interviews, you should follow Brenna's cue, because if you listen carefully, I said, Brenna, are you a fan of the Groovy Ghoulies? And her answer was, well, I haven't really dug that deep into them. And so instead of her answer being, I don't know that much about them, she kind of bent it into a personal story about going to the record store day back in the day and learning about music. So what I'm saying is Brenna is a fantastic interview subject, because no matter what question I throw at her, she can give a good answer and not just nope. So if you're in a band, pay attention to Brenna. She's really good at doing interviews. I guess going back. Oh, actually, you mentioned Toy Dolls. What an underrated band in the USA. Toy Dolls are frigging awesome.
What an underrated guitar player. Like, holy shit. That band is a three piece and he plays clean. Like, and he does what he does. Oh, if there's any, like, because I'm not a nerd guitar player. I just strum, you know, hence strummer is my favorite, but my guitar player, Kenny, he's a noodler. And if there's any nerdy guitar players out that are like, just want to like, just dig in somebody's like fingers, but I'm like, just look at Olga. He's insane how he does that. So talented. He's kind of like the Brian Setzer, you know. It's like people don't realize he can like be a shredder if he wanted to. He just chooses not to.
I had the opportunity to see Toy Dolls about 15. And actually, you actually could draw a lot of comparisons between Toy Dolls and Groovy Ghoulies. They're sort of somewhat similar, you know. I had the opportunity to see Toy Dolls about 15 years ago, and I didn't go because I went to see Gwar instead. And I'm still not sorry because I am a Gwar maniac, but I am sorry I didn't get to see Toy Dolls. The question being, Brenna, will Toy Dolls ever play USA ever again? Will we get to see them ever again? Will they play Punk Rock Bowling?
Let's start a TikTok campaign. Let's make it happen.
I agree. I would love
I don't,
to see
I don't know if they will. I saw them in the States when they played, and it was past my prime years, you know. I wasn't pitting anymore. I wasn't like going crazy. I was just standing in the back, like enjoying it like an old person. And I look at my husband like, okay, you gotta hold my backpack. I gotta go. And I just ran into the crowd and I started pogoing. And then I came back and like my feet hurt and I'm like out of breath. I'm like, oh, that was worth it. Oh, so good.
One last thing about Cappy is, and we talked about this in the podcast before, so we don't need to beat to death, but we talked about changing your immediate surroundings. And there was that whole thing with Dixon clothing, and Cappy thought it was not cool that Punk Rock Museum and some other people were partnering with Dixon. And Cappy said, well, I think it's not cool. I like the bands that are partnering with Dixon. I think it's not cool that they're doing that. And Punk Rock Museum and NoFX were actually pretty cool. They came around and said, you know what, Cappy, you're right. It's not a cool collab, so we're not going to do it anymore. The point being is sometimes the little guy, and Cappy was, I mean, out of all the bands and companies involved in that whole brawl, if you will, or not even a brawl, discussion actually is probably more accurate. Yeah. Cappy was the littlest guy, and he prevailed. So it just goes to show sometimes the little guy can change the immediate surroundings, and maybe even a little bit more than that. So, you know, I mean, I've been a Cappy fan for decades now, and I'm even more of a fan. Even though he's totally wacky and totally weird, he's great. Kepi's the man.
I love that. Kind of I love that situation.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, right.
I just, I do love that situation, how it unfolded, because too many times you see somebody calling somebody out. And I know there's a thing, you know, the cancel culture, and there's stuff that, dude, we don't need to cry about this thing. But there's also some stuff that we do need to talk about and, like, make attention to. And when you do something like that, and when, like, if I am the person, or I am the company, or if my business is the one who's getting called out, too easily nowadays, people, instead of having humility and being humble and like taking a step back and just thinking, I might be wrong, they just immediately square their shoulders up and just go, fuck you, I'm not wrong. I'm a standby. You don't know what you're talking. And they just want to fight about it. And I think a lot of this problems with this polarization in the world that's been so hot, it could, a huge thing would just be if we could have a sense of like, just be wrong for a second. Maybe you are the person, not 100%, but maybe if you just step back and have some like humbleness and just like, please tell me how you think I'm wrong. And let's, and I don't know, just don't put up a wall and immediately fucking fight. And I like how they responded to the scenario. They, you know, they first put out a, from what I saw, they put out a, you know, a very business political Nope, we don't support anything like that. I don't know what you're talking about. But then when it came more into the light, instead of doubling down, they just said, you know what? I think we didn't do something right, and we're going to change it. That's huge. That's a small little thing that could be huge.
I agree with you 100%, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here. And
Do it, do it, do it.
let's take the other's perspective is sometimes if you say you're right, we shouldn't have done that, then that can get nailed to you forever and you can't ever get underneath
Yep.
that rock. And then sometimes just by denying, 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 eventually it washes it away. So I do think people on the
Yeah.
Kepi side of things maybe could be a little bit more tolerant. Actually, Glass House or,
Yeah, yeah.
whoever casts it, what is it? Not. What's the phrase? Whoever was without sin, let he cast the first stone.
With
So I do
the
think
first
people on
stone.
the other side of things could be like, if someone's like, yeah, you know what, that was not cool, and they'd be like, all right, man, it's cool now that he's cool. Like I'll
Yeah.
use the Bad Brains as an example. The Bad Brains have one song that's not cool, and some of them had said not cool things. However, pretty much all of them, HR excluded, have said, you know, it was not cool that we did that, and we shouldn't have said that, and we don't stand behind that anymore. And so
Yeah.
pretty much all the bad, if you ask me, it was the 80s, it was a different time. People, so all right, so they're saying it was not cool, and that's fine. Some people still hit the Bad Brains with that issue, even though they said it was
Yeah.
not cool. You know what I mean?
Beastie Boys
So
kind of did the same thing in an
true.
interview. Somebody kind of tried to back them into a corner. I don't know who it was or what it is, and don't quote me, I might be wrong. But it was pretty recent, you know? And somebody said, well, if you're so progressive now and you're, talking about liberal and left and, supporting this and that, well, how could you write a song like Girls where you're just subjectifying women and it's so sexist? And the answer they kind of gave, paraphrasing, was, well, yeah, we wrote that, but do you want us to stay the same so you can talk shit, or do you want to see us evolve and grow from our mistakes? So yeah, of course we've changed.
Well, there you have it. And speaking of people that have written funny songs, Linda Lindas have teamed up with Weird Al. That's kind of cool. Brenna, I don't know if you checked out the song or not, Linda Lindas with Weird Al. Are you pro
No,
Weird
not
Al?
yet.
Okay, so they got a new song called Yo Me Estreso, which I think is I'm stressed in Spanish. And so it's Weird Al and the Linda Lindas teaming up to do a song together. I'm not like some people my age are like Weird Al maniacs. I'm not a Weird Al maniac, but I like Weird Al in general, and he's got just some songs that are absolutely hilarious. And so I think it's a cool lineup. But the question is, Brenna, Linda Lindas started as maybe novelty is the wrong word, but a unique band in a unique situation in that they were a bunch of 12-year-old young women in a band, in a punk band that was getting national or even international recognition, which in a way is cool because, oh, we've got a platform that most other people don't have. But then sometimes you can get nailed to that platform, and that's all you're ever going to be, you know? Do you think the Lindas are facing that challenge? Will they be able to get over that challenge if it doesn't exist?
I think they're getting there. Kind of like what I said with Bradley's kid, the Sublime. The real test is going to be time. When that novelty first hit, I wasn't like, oh my God, I love them. I wasn't jumping on the bandwagon. I'm like, well, let me see what they're about. Like, yes, this is cool and new, but like, what is it going to be like after they're on the road for years together and frustrations come out and the real personalities and writing, songwriting? And like, that's really what shows a band like who they are to the rest of the world. Me, I never liked really Paramore. Not my cup of tea. And when they were big, I was like, I kind of hated on them. I was like, oh, well, it's just a rich band, like just the spotlight, and like, they kind of don't deserve it, but whatever. And then all of a sudden, like a couple years ago, they released a new album, and I'm like, oh wait, they're still around, and like this album's really good. I'm like, they've proved themselves, and that's kind of what Linda Lindas have to do and are doing. They're just proving themselves, even though they don't have to anybody. But it's as an artist, musician, you get music, paint, whatever, you're in it for the public, and you got to prove it.
I actually feel that exact way about Hanson. Like when Hanson came out, they definitely were a novelty band. Four, three brothers, and they're all like 6, 8, and 12 or whatever. You know what I mean? And Hanson is still around making records. So you got to give Hanson props. They're in it for the music, they're not in it for the fame. You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of cool.
I've never heard of that, and you're the first person, and that's the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life right now.
Brennan, you can go see Hanson this month if you want. You can see Hanson live, and they're all like 35 and
Last Gang
45
Hanson
now.
tour.
I would definitely go. I mean, I'm going to see The Last Gang anyway, but I would definitely get a few tickets. The Last Gang Hanson. Just a couple
Oh my God.
just a couple last stories talking about the rigors of touring. And we talked about this last week, but I want to mention it again. Lauryn Hill and the Fugees canceled the tour like 3 days out. Lauryn Hill is notorious for canceling shows, and she was kind of blaming the press, saying, "Well, the press makes it seem like I won't ever show up to shows, and that's why we canceled the show, and that's why this tour, and that's why ticket sales were low." And so a lot of people are like, "Lauryn Hill's at it again." That's Lauryn Hill. But the question is Lauryn Hill? We don't know that Lauryn Hill has suffered from mental health issues, but judging by many of her live shows where she's acted erratically, that's potentially in the cards. So, Brenna, the question is, for a large-scale tour like this that gets canceled off the bat, should we condemn Lauryn Hill and the Fugees, or should we feel sorry for them, or do we not know? You know what I mean? Or any tour where it gets canceled out of the blue, you know? You really don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and often what even the band says why it was canceled is not – like, whenever a band says, "Oh, we had scheduling issues," it usually means somebody's in rehab, you know?
There's always something – there's truth behind everything. Yeah, you don't know what it's supposed to be. And part of me is like, I don't care, and part of me does care. It's fun to speculate, like, the real reason. All I know is what I know, you know? I have never – canceled the tour. I'm thinking back. Oh shit, my memory's bad. I don't think I've canceled the tour. No, but we had COVID. That's legally we couldn't play. But I
think if the law prohibits you from playing, that can't be held against you. If you are legally too dangerous by law, yeah. I think that's fair.
We've so far, knock on wood, we've never had to cancel a tour. But I can say from experience that we would never cancel a tour. It would have to be something super, super egregious where. It we're crippling to do it because, you know, if I ever get down, I'm like, oh, I don't want to fucking go on tour. I'm exhausted. I just don't want to do this. I'm emotionally in it. I just remember, like, I'm in a place that I'm so lucky to be, and not a lot of people get this opportunity. And there's people that bought tickets that are counting on me to make their night just a little bit better, a little bit happier, a little bit more inspired. And it's going to be hard, and it's, sometimes your mental health takes a toll, but you got to find me. I have to find a way to push through it. But then again, you see shit like Amy Winehouse, and you're like, that did not go well. She did not need to go on tour. That was terrible. So it all depends on the person, I guess.
I like your attitude. I agree with you 100%. I would say with maybe Amy Winehouse, some other artists, or there's some mitigating circumstances, and that maybe she didn't want to go on tour at all, or maybe she thought she did. But she's strung out on a lot of things. She's got mental health. And there's people behind the scenes that say, no, Amy should go on tour so I can get my 10% and so forth. You know what I mean? So
So who knows what Lauryn Hill had? Like, I don't know what she's dealing with. I don't know what she has in her head or her body or her whatever. So if she made the call, she made the call.
Well, let's do one last story and then we will wrap tonight on up. My main man, Danzig, is releasing or has released the Black Hell single. And I got to say, I am impressed by Danzig yet again. Well, I'm always impressed by Danzig, but I was impressed by him last summer where he did all of Danzig 1 live. And it was so amazing. His voice was, his voice been a little grainy past 15 years. His voice was back 100% or maybe 95%. Like it was Danzig 1988 standing right there. It was rad as hell. He sounded amazing. But about 10 years ago, he's like, I'm gonna re-release Who Killed Marilyn as a 12-inch single and Black Hell from the Hangover 2. Like, in case you didn't know, everyone, I have an exclusive song on the Hangover 2. And like for 10 years, these releases didn't come out. And it was like, all right, Danzig's, you know, making up stuff again. But then 10 years later, both the Who Killed Marilyn release came out as a 12-inch. And finally, we're getting a physical release version of Black Hell, which is a great, great, very rare Danzig song, which was only ever released on The Hangover 2 and not on any his albums or anything. And it's rad as hell. It's a little pricey, though, honestly. It's out via Cleopatra Records. And, you know, different people have different opinions on Cleopatra. I'm going to contradict myself. I've been kind of thumbing down Cleopatra as of late. But on the other hand, if it wasn't for Cleopatra, maybe this wouldn't have come out. That being said, Brenna, would you care to guess what this 12-inch single with about 6 minutes worth of music, A-side is Black Hell, B-side is Danzig's version of 13, what she wrote for Johnny Cash. What do you think MSRP of that is, Brenna?
Okay. 10 years in the making. Only released in a movie. Can I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
Was this song ever released on a digital release as like the soundtrack?
Yes, you can stream it on Spotify.
Okay. I'm going to say, no, that's too cheesy for him to do that. I would love it. I would love it if he tagged it for $66.66, but I know he's not. So I'm going to say $200, Bob.
Well, actually, on Price is Right, they go ding, 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 ding. You actually hit the number on the nose. Signed copies, $66.66 or something like
Shut
that.
Shut up.
You hit it dead on. However, the regular version, $29.95, which I think is a little bit much for 6 minutes worth of music. That being said, did I order it? Yes, because I'm a Danzig maniac. I'm very happy this stuff's coming out. I'm very happy that Danzig is finally digging into the vault and releasing some of this rare stuff. Where's the Sam Haines stuff? Where's the Out of Print Misfit stuff? Where's the Out of Print Danzig 1-4? Maybe he's using Cleopatra as like a test run. Like, I'll put out my less desirable records, and then we'll release the good stuff after they prove themselves. Brenna Danzig, where do you stand? Are you happy this stuff's coming out? And do you think the Danzig train is over and that, like, will we ever get new Danzig material, or does that matter?
I'm excited. You know what? I would love it. He's always been, from the what he's put out, he's always thought in a different manner, not the typical, I want to be in like a 4-piece punk rock band. You know, he wanted to be Jim Morrison. He wanted to have, you know, no guitar player, keyboard player. He always was trying to be weird, like the Screamers or just something fucking bizarre. So I would love it if he came out with something new and it was just, it wasn't what people expected. It was fucking like Grateful Dead meets fucking, you know, like the Screamers. That would be fucking awesome. But, you know, Danzig is a special place in my heart. I remember vividly listening to Static Age on vinyl and just the screeching or the hissing of the tracks was on. Oh, it just made it even so much better. And I was fortunate enough to be at Anton LaVey's grandson's wedding on June 6th, 06, where Danzig played. And I was like, holy shit, I can't believe I'm watching this.
Was that like a private event kind of thing?
No, well, it was a concert. And it was Danzig, right? Yeah, it was. Yeah, he played. Yeah, that was fucking Danzig. I'm old and my memory, sometimes my dreams are, they think it's reality, but no, this happened. Like Hank Williams, III played for whatever reason, I'm not a fan. But, and also the Murder Junkies with Merle Haggard after the wedding. And it was at the Gibson Anthem Theater somewhere in Universal Studios area, LA. And it was the wedding of, you know, the Church of Satan, his grandson was getting married. And it was a whole event show/wedding, and you get to buy tickets for it. It wasn't private; it was a public thing.
Well, that sounds super rad. Actually, I was going to wrap it up, but I got one more question for you. You mentioned the Screamers, maybe the most underrated band that never released a record ever. The Screamers, amazing band, right?
Yeah, just so bizarre. What? Great. I don't fit into it anymore. One day, maybe, hopefully, I will. It's a destroyed Screamers T-shirt, and I don't even know where I got it from. Ripped up, white. Faded, gross now, and it's the photo of their logo, and it says it was just him. What did it say? It's like something about coffee in it. I forgot. God, it was such a cool shirt. I still have it. I haven't let it go. I'll never let it go.
And actually, I'm going to throw a Screamers question at you, and I promise I'll let you go after that. Is, you know, I am very anti-bootleggers. I can't stand bootleggers. I think it's bad, and you should not rob bands of their money. But the Screamers, No living member of the Screamers, nor any estate owner of the Screamers, has any interest in releasing the Screamers demos album, with Gaze X, which really is just an album. It's not even a demos album. It's an album. There is there's an underwhelming official 5-track EP put out by Superior Viaduct, which is cool, but it's only 5 songs. It's not the full album. I would argue in this one instance, and related ones, bootleggers are doing a public service by bootlegging this record and getting it out into the public so I can hear it. Brenna, what's your opinion of bootleggers putting out neglected material?
Give the people what they want, man. if it's not happening, we gotta dig and find those gems.
Well, speaking of giving the people what they want, what the people want is the Last Gang's new record, Obscene Daydreams, out September 20. And they also want to see the Last Gang on tour right now, all across the USA. So just go to the Last Gang Instagram. All the dates will pop on up. Brenna, thank you for coming on the show. It's been a blast to have you on. You're welcome on anytime, of course. Always great talking with you. Let's wrap this up with a song. Do you want to play an older Last Gang track or a track that meant something to you? What should we wrap this on up with?
Oh shit. Deep cut. You know what? Let's get nasty with it and just play a punk rock banger. Let's do Oh no. Hold on, my brain can't think. Kenny, what's that one song that we did with you guys that we never got released? The Bristol of Memory, the fast one. Show me a man, a bright shining hero, a bright you, a tragedy, oh yeah.
I thought that was one of your old Last Gang
No,
songs.
yeah, I mean you were on it, but you're with Bristol.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the song. I'm sorry, man.
I don't even remember because I hated that scream.
Fuck! Yeah, I can't remember the name of the damn song. All right, we'll just okay. Yeah, speaking about bootlegging, go find and play "I'm the Disease." That's your homework.
Well, this is On the Disease by The Last Gang. Brenna, thanks again. And listeners, we will see you next week. And in the meantime, be sure to check out The Last Gang on tour right now and check out their album. And anyways, we'll see you next week.